right, Fern Poole.
Ashton or Andrea aren't here. I'm here. Anthony Spence on behalf of DSS.
Thank you.
Okay, no problem.
Al Sylvester.
Present.
Eileen Eckers.
Here.
Andrea Judas.
I'm here.
Catherine Giesman.
Guzman. Here.
Samuel Pride. Elizabeth Ryan.
Here.
And Mary Silverberg.
Present.
Stephen Thal.
Present.
Carol Jenkins.
Here.
Catherine Sum. Christopher Lassen.
Here.
Barry Borgard. Laura St. Amon.
I'm here.
Tyrell Sampson. Jennifer Proto.
I'm here.
Ray Martin.
Here.
Thank you.
It's my understanding that we had invited ADS Council to the meeting. Is she here?
Laura wasn't able to make it, but I can pass along any outstanding business to her. Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Jen. Any members of the public who wish to identify themselves?
Yes, Philip McGalnick, SRC Chair, here by invitation.
Thanks, Phil. Welcome.
Michaela Zito here from the Usher Syndrome Michaela Zito here from the Usher Syndrome Coalition.
Thank you, Michaela. Any others? Hearing none, let's move on to the next item of the agenda. We have a single item agenda today, and it is of the utmost importance. So I'm going to read it, and then we will begin discussion. We have proposals for ABP-BVI going forward. A, repeal Connecticut General Statute Section 17A-810, to eliminate duplication of ABP-BVI functions with those of the State Rehabilitation Council to BESB. B, these are choices. Continue with ABP-BVI as an independent advisory board that requires recruitment and appointment of members to fill board vacancies and expired terms. We can begin the discussion with anyone who would like to offer their opinion. Board members.
This is Andrea. Can you?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I wasn't sure. I've done a lot of thinking about this, and I apologize for not having been able to be present recently, but my job hours have changed. My first thought is that the statement is that we're duplicating the job, for lack of a better term, of the SRC, but the SRC is only to rehab, and BSB is bigger than that. There's children's services and adult services, and so I feel like that's not an accurate assessment. And secondly, I feel like it's very important that we continue, but I think that our name, in the changing of the name of this board, it stripped us of the importance. It took away the association and affiliation with BSB. At this point, by saying that we're an advisory board of people who are blind and visually impaired, that's basically just saying we're a group of people blind and visually impaired. It has no, it took away the advisory connection to BSB, to SRC, to that whole, and I think that's really critical that not only do we continue to exist, but that we get renamed back to something that represents the importance of what we do. Thank you.
So a couple of things about that, Andrea. It is called the Advisory Board for Persons Who Are Blind or Visually Impaired to ensure that it captures the interests of all people who are blind or visually impaired. And the connection with BSB is understood. Changing the name of the advisory board, I think, would require a technical amendment to the statute. So that's quite an undertaking. one of the reasons behind this suggestion to consolidate the functions of both the advisory board and the state rehab council, assuming it is possible, is first and foremost, the indifference that comes from the governor's office in terms of filling board positions. The most recently appointed board position expired in 2021. My own position on the board, which is a gubernatorial appointment, the governor appoints the chair of the advisory board, expired in 2013. We have heard nothing from the governor's office. Contact with the governor's office has resulted in no response. So there is a crisis of indifference surrounding this board. And I think it either needs to be addressed or we have to consider whether the board has outlived its mission.
Beth? Can you hear me? Beth? Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, Beth.
Yes. So, I don't think the name needs to be changed. I believe we need to continue to be separate boards because we have separate responsibilities. And as a matter of fact, years ago, a few of us will remember that the point to the advisory board was not to necessarily give opinions on other blind people. It was to oversee BSBY because people like me went to the legislature to make sure that the Pepsi company was taken out because of the abuse. Now, recently that's become back into, apparently they're using Pepsi again. Hopefully there won't be a problem. But years ago, we did have control over the BSBY board, whereas now we don't, which is a disappointment. I don't know if Eileen Akers remembers that, or maybe Stephen Thal, but this goes way back to Chris Kuehl and me going to the legislature because there was improprieties with Pepsi and BSBY. And I don't want things like that to happen again. So it's impertinent that we continue our boards.
So in 2011, the policymaking board, which the BSBY advisory board had been morphed into, was again changed to an advisory board. The advisory board no longer has oversight over BSBY. In addition to that, when BSBY became part of the department, was it DRS at the time, which has since become ADS, BSBY is no longer a standalone agency.
Right.
So that means it has different status than it did. So you have two things going on here. The first of which is we are strictly an advisory board. We do not have any oversight over BSBY. All we can do is offer advice and ask BSBY to keep us informed about its activities, and then we advise them on matters of policy, practice, and we have no authority beyond that. So I think what we have to keep in mind is that BSBY is no longer a standalone agency, that it is subordinate to ADS, and the reason that the board was renamed, again, was to ensure that it had a statewide scope, as opposed to an intra-agency scope.
Yes, it's that again. I agree with you. But the problem is when issues come up, for instance, we do not have enough TDIs in the state of Connecticut, and our director, Carol, wants we bring that issue to the governor and to the legislature. How are we supposed to get other blind people to back us and go to the legislature to enforce that we have no TDIs in Connecticut if we do not have an advisory board to let us know what's going on? For instance,
That's all I'm saying. That's one example.
And this is Carol. Just to clarify, I did not ask anyone to go to the legislature.
No, I know. I'm saying if we were asked to speak on behalf of blind people, how would we know what's going on if we weren't informed?
Go
ahead, Carol.
And this is Carol. From a VESB standpoint, I email the boards and I email like the NFB state president and others like that. I have a distribution list, and I can take a look at that and add more people to it, but that's currently what I do.
So just to be clear, neither the advisory board nor the agency nor BSBY, the BSBY Bureau, has the authority to lobby the General Assembly. What we can do is educate them, but in terms of lobbying and gathering our people of similar interest to go before the legislature to persuade them about a piece of legislation or about something that has to do with BSBY is a matter outside the scope of this board, and that is political activism, which is something that can be done by private citizens. So all we can do is put out the word that here's what's going on and here's what we think. There are a number of ways for that to happen, and that's independent of the advisory board to BSBY.
This is Irene. I'd like to comment about the word advisory.
Yep.
First of all, that's why I don't see this as duplication of effort, because that's all we are, is an advisory board. So if we come up with something having to do, for example, with VR, all we could do is say, suggest to SRC that we would like to suggest that perhaps you would consider something that we have discussed. That's the first thing. Second of all, because we only are an advisory board, of course the governor's the office of the governor may not have interest in us, because remember when all these political appointments were being described, that's when we as a BSBY board had to report to the legislature what was going on. We had to submit an annual report. We have lost that authority. So advisory definitely weakens us. But I think that should not eliminate us. I feel very strongly that we should continue as an advisory board. You mentioned, Al, very good point, but our name, that we have a much broader scope. We have never exercised that at all, because I never thought about it. We have limited our concerns strictly to BSBY. But if we really go by the scope of our name, our advisory capacity is only made broader. So that's all I'm going to say for the moment.
And I just want to note, to make it clear, that the governor's office, Speaker of the House, Senate President, and the majority and minority leaders of all four caucuses have responsibilities with regard to the advisory board, and that is to appoint members. I think the most recent appointment was by the Senate Minority Leader, and that was Sam Pride's appointment, and that was way back in 2020, somewhere around there. So again, I mean, one of the concerns that we have, or at least we should have, is the indifference from the governor's office and from all four caucuses of the General Assembly. So if the board expects to continue as an advisory board, then what I suggest is that it has to take a more activist role in terms of informing the governor's office, as well as the House Speaker, Senate President, and the leaders of the four caucuses, majority and minority leaders in both the House and Senate, that they have a responsibility to appoint people. Not only do they have a responsibility to appoint people, but we would like to point out to them that their responsibility extends to appointing people who are not just going to take up space, but who are interested and want to be active in the blindness community to make sure that BESBE has the best and most current advice that comes directly from the grassroots. That component of the advisory board has been missing for some time now.
This is Eileen. We've brought this up, especially Steve Thaw has brought this up for years. And yes, we as an advisory board have not assumed enough responsibility, perhaps. But on the other hand, something you mentioned these officers needing to know about this, but so does the blindness community need to know about this. And I'm not sure how we reach out, but yes, it's a two-sided thing. And so we perhaps have been negligent in not becoming more proactive on both sides of the issue.
Yeah, I mean, what I see is here, we have a culture of indifference that we need to overcome. And, you know, that's a pretty big deal. This is what has brought us to this crossroads here. You know, it's either ABPVI continues, but it has to continue in a more activist form, or it has to let go.
Right.
And the silence I'm hearing right now tells me that while we hear people saying that we want to hang on, I hear letting go.
My hand is raised.
Go ahead, Mary.
No, I have a comment. I went back to look at my own appointment, and I realized something. I think something very similar has happened here, as did with the Connecticut State Library. I was originally, years ago, I had served on the SRC, took a break, came back, and I was appointed to this advisory board in March of 2016. That's 8 years ago, all right? My term I was appointed by the governor, and I would have completed my term in March of 2020. We all know what happened in March of 2020. And it's only in the last year or so that we've really come out of that. Yes, there is an attitude of indifference, and it's not, I'm not going to blame that all on the legislature. And I'm not blaming anybody, but I see what happened when everybody was trying to just get through, maintain, do not lose any service, but we're not gaining a lot. It was like maintain the status quo and keep things moving. And I see now that we've gotten through that, we're well past it, now there's no excuse for anybody, legislative sector or us. We did it with the state library. It was totally regrouped. We went through the same process there as we are here right now. And the bottom line, the result was, yes, the advisory board serves an important function. And although what we recommend is not mandated, it is highly suggested and should be taken into consideration. And we are the conduit for other people within the blind community to be aware of what's happening and to help to make things happen. So I think what I would suggest is all of us should know where we each stand. And then possibly one of the things that the library did, which I thought was extremely helpful, except for a small core of us who had served, and our terms were probably up at that point too, but a core of us remained on the board for a temporary appointment of 1 year. While we recruited new members were brought in, we continued for a few meetings to reorient everybody, reestablish who we were as a board, what we needed to do, make sure everybody understood those roles, and then we just nominated new officers and we're looking for more people. But we have established a much clearer, let's say, what defined our mission statement. What is it that our agency is supposed to do? What are we supposed to do in our advisory capacity? And then rebuild from there. And I think it's time for us to consider that very seriously. Because I would not like to see this advisory board be removed. I would never give up, even though we don't have mandated power. Anytime you give up something that in the past has served, you're giving up more than just a board and some meetings. You're giving up some of your control, some of your stakeholdership in the whole process.
This is Eileen. Mary, I would just like to address your point about the library from another angle. You may recall, well, people here on this call may recall that when there was a bit of a brouhaha about moving the library to Library for the Blind, which is now called CT Lab, to Middletown, there was talk about changing the Library for the Blind to be under the auspices of BSBD. As a board, we voted that down. And I think a lot of us realized that had that happened, we would not be able to be served by NLS because NLS was a library system and they were not willing to support services if they were under the auspices of a rehab agency. And that was my understanding of it. We voted it down, and that's what happened as a result of what Mary was saying. We have not been proactive enough. And I'm not pointing fingers here because I've been a board member forever, so I'm as guilty as anybody, so I'm not pointing fingers. But I think we need to continue as a proactive board, including following our own bylaws, which we have not done.
I agree.
Mary, I see you still have your hand up. Did you want to say something else, or did you just forget to put it down?
There we go.
Okay.
Al, this is Carol. I have a...
Go ahead, Carol.
Question. Maybe this is a Jen Proto question. So there's currently three vacancies on the board, and then Al, with you and Steve... wanting to resign, then there would be five. Then there wouldn't be a chairperson. So we wouldn't even, if every single person who's currently a board member attended, there wouldn't be a quorum. Am I understanding that correctly?
No. A quorum is the majority of board members who are seated. That means those who are appointed. They don't necessarily have to be present. For example, when Steve and I leave, there will be five vacancies on the board, and that will leave. It should leave six people, six voting members. So a majority of those six would constitute a quorum.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Steve.
I want to make you aware of a couple points. First, I received a reappointment to the board in 2018 by the Speaker of the House, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And it says in my thing, until a successor replaces me. So that is that. The second thing is, over the years has given us the opportunity to hear from the staff managers, Jennifer, the legislator, before that it was Andrew, in order to help bring stuff up that we may not be able to have the advantage of doing. And the third thing is,
where I think we've been very helpful in recent memory, going blind to Quality Day. I think without us, this would not have occurred at all. At least from 2019 to now, there's been three of them. And while this last one, we had some good works from the staff of BESBE, thanks for Carol supporting it. But prior to that, we never had really good support for Blind Equality Day. And the big question comes up in my mind, how important is Blind Equality Day in working in conjunction with employment, hire the disabled for the whole month? I mean, we could really make an impression in the community about our services. The last thing I want to say is we have some work groups over the years that we worked on. Some of them included voc rehab, employment. We were working with Mary Burgard. I know Mary was on it. I know I've been on it. Eileen's been on a committee. I know Al's been on it. I know we also did something on low vision group for several months. And then I forget the lady's name that left. She headed up the technology group. And I think Catherine was doing some work with the parent group. And we know that there's been some, will be some changes about the eligibility, I believe, in children's services. Carol can correct me on that, in terms of eligibility requirements and so on, that we have to make a change. So these are just some small examples of what we've done, and if we haven't done them, then we don't know where things would be. But I think there are some advantages to having a board. However, it also needs to be reminded of the amount of time it takes to do all of this, plus what's going on, all the changes in ADS. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I want to point out that one of the fundamental differences between the advisory board and the state rehab council is that of standing committees. Now, not only does the State Rehab Council have standing committees, but they have a means by which to recruit people to sit on those committees. So it's a matter of they have to be staffed. It's not a question of whether somebody wants to join or not join. These committees are obligatory. And I think if the board expects to continue, it would be to its advantage to look into having such a structure. I'd be interested now in hearing any comments from the agency about the circumstance of either maintaining the board or somehow merging its functions with those of the State Rehab Council. Now, it's my understanding that RSA, the Rehab Services Administration, does not see a pathway to that. So that could be a significant roadblock, but there are ways, informal ways, by which some of the functions of the advisory board could be shadowed by the State Rehab Council. So I'd be interested to hear what the agency has to say.
No, Jen, go ahead.
Yeah.
Jen, go ahead.
Couple of thoughts. One, I think when the proposal was to merge the two, the council and the board and the council together, and referenced redundancies, I think probably the area of redundancy that I'm seeing, having attended both sets of meetings, is the agency reports. They're almost identical to both groups. Obviously, there's different populations, but some of the, you know, the like budgetary information and things like that are identical. And so one economy of scale that would happen if you converged is you have the same group of staff presenting only once versus twice. So I think that was kind of the redundancy that we were seeing. as far as the governor's appointment process, keep in mind that there's like so many boards and counties.